ruled by this august body. We are an empire that will never return to the political maneuvering and corruption that have wounded us so deeply. We are an empire that will be directed by a single sovereign, chosen for life. The Senate went wilder. We are an empire ruled by the majority. An empire ruled by a new constitution. An empire of laws, not of politicians. An empire devoted to the preservation of a just society. Of a safe and secure society. We are an empire that will stand 10,000 years. The roar of the Senate took on a continuous boiling roll like the inside of a permanent thunderstorm. We will celebrate the anniversary of this day as Empire Day for the sake of our children, for our children's children, for the next 10,000 years. Safety, security, justice and peace. The Senate went berserk. Say it with me. Safety, security, justice and peace. Safety, security, justice and peace. The Senate took up the chant, louder and louder until it seemed the whole galaxy roared along. Bail couldn't hear Padme over the din, but he could read her lips. So this is how liberty dies, she was saying to herself, with cheering and applause. We can't let this happen. Bail lurched to his feet. I have to get my pod. We can still enter a motion. No. Her hand seized his arm with astonishing strength, and for the first time since he arrived, she looked straight into his eyes. No, Bail. You can't enter a motion. You can't. Fang Czar has already been arrested. And Tundra Domei. And it won't be long until the entire delegation of the 2,000 are declared enemies of the state. You stayed off that list for good reason. Don't add your name by what you do today. But I can't just stand by and watch. You're right. You can't just watch. You have to vote for him. What? Bail, it's the only way. It's the only hope you have of remaining in a position to do anyone any good. Vote for Palpatine. Vote for the Empire. Make Mon Mothma vote for him too. Be good little senators. Mind your manners and keep your heads down. And keep doing all those things we can't talk about. All those things I can't know. Promise me, Bail. Padme, what you're talking about, what we're not talking about, it could take 20 years. Are you under suspicion? What are you going to do? Don't worry about me, she said distantly. I don't know I'll live that long. Within the Separatist Leadership Bunker's control center were dozens of combat droids. There were armed and armored guards. There were automated defense systems. There were screams and tears and pleas for mercy. None of them mattered. The Sith had come to Mustafar. Poggle the Lesser, Archduke of Geonosis, scrambled like an animal through a litter of severed arms and legs and heads, both metal and flesh, whimpering, fluttering his ancient gauzy wings until a bar of lightning flash-burned his own head free of his neck. Shumai, president and CEO of the Commerce Guild, looked up from her knees, hands clasped before her, tears streaming down her shriveled cheeks. We were promised a reward, she gasped. A handsome reward. I am your reward, the Sith Lord said. You don't find me handsome.
Please,
she screeched through her sobbing.
Please!
The blue-white blade cut into and out from her skull, and her corpse swayed. A negligent flip of the wrist slashed through her column of neck rings. Her brain-burned head tumbled to the floor. The only sound then was a panicky stutter of footfalls as Wat Tambor and the two Nymordians scampered along a hallway toward a nearby conference room. The Sith Lord was in no hurry to pursue. All the exits from the control center were blast-shielded, and they were sealed, and he had destroyed the controls. the conference room was, as the expression goes, a dead end. Thousands of clone troops swarmed the Jedi Temple. Multiple battalions on each level were not just an occupying force, but engaged in the long, painstaking process of preparing dead bodies for positive identification. The Jedi dead were to be tallied against the rolls maintained in the temple archives. The clone dead would be cross-checked with regimental rosters. All the dead had to be accounted for. This was turning out to be somewhat more complicated than the clone officers had expected. Though the fighting had ended hours ago, troopers kept turning up missing. Usually small patrolling squads, 5 troopers or less, that still made random sweeps through the temple hallways, checking every door and window, every desk and every closet. Sometimes when those closets were opened, what was found inside was 5 dead clones. And there were disturbing reports as well. Officers coordinating the sweeps recorded a string of sightings of movement, usually a flash of robe disappearing around a corner, caught in a trooper's peripheral vision, that on investigation seemed to have been only imagination or hallucination. There were also multiple reports of inexplicable sounds coming from out-of-the-way areas that turned out to be deserted. Though clone troopers were schooled from even before awakening in their Kaminoan creche schools to be ruthlessly pragmatic, materialistic, and completely impervious to superstition, some of them began to suspect that the temple might be haunted. In the vast misty gloom of the Room of 1,000 Fountains, one of the clones on the cleanup squad caught a glimpse of someone moving beyond a stand of Hylaean marsh bamboo.
"Halt!" he shouted. "You there! Don't move!"
The shadowy figure darted off into the gloom, and the clone turned to his squad brothers.
"Come on! Whatever that was, we can't let it get away!"
Clones pelted off into the mist. Behind them, at the spill of bodies they'd been working on, fog and gloom gave birth to a pair of Jedi Masters. Obi-Wan stepped over white-armored bodies to kneel beside blaster-burned corpses of children. Tears flowed freely down tracks that hadn't had a chance to dry since he'd first entered the temple. Not even the younglings survived. It looks like they made a stand here. Yoda's face creased with ancient sadness.
"Or trying to flee they were, with some turning back to slow the pursuit."
Obi-Wan turned to another body, an older one, a Jedi fully mature and beyond. Grief punched a gasp from his chest.
"Master Yoda, it's the troll."
Yoda looked over and nodded bleakly.
"Abandon his young students, Syndrolig would not."
Obi-Wan sank to his knees beside the fallen Jedi.
"He was my lightsaber instructor."
"And his was I," Yoda said. "Cripple us, grief will, if let it we do."
"I know. But it's one thing to know a friend is dead, Master Yoda. It's another to find his body."
"Yes."
Yoda moved closer. With his gimmer stick, he pointed at a bloodless gash in Drawleague's shoulder that had cloven deep into his chest.
"Yes, it is. See this, do you? This wound no blaster could make."
An icy void opened in Obi-Wan's heart. It swallowed his pain and his grief, leaving behind a precariously empty calm. He whispered,
"A lightsaber."
"Business with the recall beacon have we still."
Yoda pointed with his stick at figures winding toward them among the trees and pools.
"Returning the clones are."
Obi-Wan rose. "I will learn who did this."
"Learn?"
Yoda shook his head sadly.
"No, already you do,"
he said, and hobbled off into the gloom. Darth Vader left nothing living behind when he walked from the main room of the control center. Casually, carelessly, he strolled along the hallway, scoring the durasteel wall with the tip of his blade, enjoying the sizzle of disintegrating metal as he had savored the smoke of charred alien flesh. The conference room door was closed. A barrier so paltry would be an insult to the blade.
A black-gloved hand made a fist. The door crumpled and fell. The Sith Lord stepped over it. The conference room was walled with transparasteel. Beyond, obsidian mountains rained fire upon the land. Rivers of lava embraced the settlement. Rune Ha'ako, aide and confidential secretary to the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, tripped over a chair as he stumbled back. He fell to the floor, shaking like a grub in a frying pan, trying to scrabble beneath the table.
"Stop!" he cried. "Enough! We surrender! Do you understand? You can't just kill us!"
The Sith Lord smiled. "Can't I?"
"We're unarmed! We surrender! Please! Please! You're a Jedi!"
"You fought a war to destroy the Jedi." Vader stood above the shivering Nymoidian, smiling down upon him, then fed him half a meter of plasma. "Congratulations on your success." The Sith Lord stepped over Ha'ako's corpse to where Wat Tambor clawed uselessly at the transparasteel wall with his armored gauntlets. The head of the Techno Union turned at his approach, cringing, arms lifted to shield his faceplate from the flames in the dragon's eyes.
"Please, I'll give you anything, anything you want."
The blade flashed twice. Tambor's arms fell to the floor, followed by his head.
"Thank you."
Darth Vader turned to the last living leader of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Newt Gunray, Viceroy of the Trade Federation, stood trembling in an alcove, blood-tinged tears streaming down his green-mottled cheeks.
"The war,"
he whimpered.
"The war is over. Lord Sidious promised. He promised we would be left in peace."
His transmission was garbled. The blade came up. "He promised you would be left in pieces." In the main holocom center of the Jedi Temple, high atop the central spire, Obi-Wan used the Force to reach deep within the shell of the recall beacon's mechanism, subtly altering the pulse calibration to flip the signal from "come home" to "run and hide." Done without any visible alteration, it would take the troopers quite a while to detect the recalibration, and longer still to reset it. This was all that could be done for any surviving Jedi. A warning, to give them a fighting chance. Obi-Wan turned from the recall beacon to the internal security scans. He had to find out exactly what he was warning them against.
"Do this not,"
Yoda said.
"Leave we must, before discovered we are."
"I have to see it," Obi-Wan said grimly.
"Like I said downstairs, knowing is one thing, seeing is another."
"Seeing will only cause you pain."
"Then it is pain that I have earned. I won't hide from it." He keyed a code that brought up a holoscan of the Room of 1,000 Fountains. "I am not afraid." Yoda's eyes narrowed to green gold slits.
"You should be."
Stone-faced, Obi-Wan watched younglings run into the room, fleeing a storm of blaster fire. He watched Sin Drolleeg and a pair of teenage Padawans. Was that we? The boy Yoda had brought to Vijoon. Backing into the scene, blades whirling, cutting down the advancing clone troopers with deflected bolts. He watched a lightsaber blade flick into the shot, cutting down first one Padawan, then the other. He watched the brisk stride of a caped figure who hacked through Drolleeg's shoulder, then stood aside as the old troll fell dying to let the rest of the clones blast the children to shreds. Obi-Wan's expression never flickered. He opened himself to what he was about to see. He was prepared and centered and trusting in the Force. And yet... Then the caped man turned to meet a cloaked figure behind him. And he was... He was... Obi-Wan, staring, wished that he had the strength to rip his eyes out of his head. But even blind, he would see this forever. He would see his friend, his student, his brother, turn and kneel in front of a black-cloaked Lord of the Sith. His head rang with a silent scream.
The traitors have been destroyed, Lord Sidious, and the archives are secured. Our ancient holocrons are again in the hands of the Sith.
Good. Good. Together, we shall master every secret of the Force.
The Sith Lord purred, like a contented rancor.
You have done well, my new apprentice. Do you feel your power growing?
Yes, my master.
Lord Vader, your skills are unmatched by any Sith before you. Go forth, my boy. Go forth and bring peace to our empire.
Fumbling nervelessly, Obi-Wan somehow managed to shut down the holoscan. He leaned on the console, but his arms would not support him. They buckled, and he twisted to the floor. He huddled against the console, blind with pain. Yoda was as sympathetic as the root of a rosher tree.
Warned you were.
Obi-Wan said, I should have let them shoot me.
What?
No. That was already too late. It was already too late at Geonosis. The Zabrak on Naboo. I should have died there, before I ever brought him here.
Stop this, you will!
Yoda gave him a stick jab in the ribs, sharp enough to straighten him up.
Make a Jedi fall one cannot. Beyond even Lord Sidious this is. Chose this Skywalker did.
Obi-Wan lowered his head. And I'm afraid I might know why.
Why? Why matters not. There is no why. There is only a Lord of the Sith and his apprentice. Two Sith.
Yoda leaned close.
And two Jedi.
Obi-Wan nodded, but he still couldn't meet the gaze of the ancient master. I'll take Palpatine.
Strong enough to face Lord Sidious, you will never be. Die you will, and painfully.
Don't make me kill Anakin, he said. He's like my brother, Master.
The boy you trained, gone he is, twisted by the dark side, consumed by Darth Vader. Out of this misery you must put him. To visit our new Emperor, my job will be.
Now Obi-Wan did face him. Palpatine faced Mace and Ajin and Kit and Saisi, four of the greatest swordsmen our order has ever produced, by himself. Even both of us together wouldn't have a chance.
True,
Yoda said.
But both of us apart, a chance we might create.
Chapter 20. Chiaroscuro. C-3PO identified the craft docking on the veranda as a DC-0052 intergalactic speeder. To be on the safe side, he left the security curtain engaged. In these troubled times, safety outweighed courtesy, even for him. A cloaked and hooded human male emerged from the DC-0052 and approached the Veil of Energy. C-3PO moved to meet him.
Hello, may I help you?
The human lifted his hands to his hood. Instead of taking it down, he folded it back far enough that C-3PO could register the distinctive relationship of eyes, nose, mouth, and beard.
Master Kenobi!
C-3PO had long ago been given detailed and quite specific instructions on the procedure for dealing with the unexpected arrival of furtive Jedi. He instantly deactivated the security curtain and beckoned.
Come inside! Quickly, you may be seen.
As C-3PO swiftly ushered him into the sitting room, Master Kenobi asked, Has Anakin been here?
Yes,
C-3PO said reluctantly.
He arrived shortly after he and the army saved the Republic from the Jedi Rebellion.
He cut himself off when he noticed that Master Kenobi suddenly looked fully prepared to dismantle him bolt by bolt. Perhaps he should not have been so quick to let the Jedi in. Wasn't he some sort of outlaw now?
I should...
C-3PO stammered, backing away.
I'll just go get the Senator, shall I? She's been lying down. After the grand convocation this morning, she didn't feel entirely well, and so...
The Senator appeared at the top of the curving stairway, belting a soft robe over her dressing gown, and C-3PO decided his most appropriate course of action would be to discreetly withdraw. But not too far. If Master Kenobi was up to mischief, C-3PO had to be in a position to alert Captain Typho and the security staff on the spot. Senator Amidala certainly didn't seem inclined to treat Master Kenobi as a dangerous outlaw. Quite the contrary, in fact. She seemed to have fallen into his arms, and her voice was thoroughly choked with emotion as she expressed a possibly inappropriate level of joy at finding the Jedi still alive. There followed some discussion that C-3PO didn't entirely understand. It was political information, entirely outside his programming, having to do with Master Anakin and the Republic having fallen, whatever that meant, and with something called a Sith Lord, and Chancellor Palpatine, and the dark side of the Force, and really he couldn't make sense of any of it. The only part he clearly understood had to do with the Jedi Order being outlawed and all but wiped out. That news had been all over the Lipartian Way this morning, and the not altogether unexpected revelation that Master Kenobi had come here seeking Master Anakin. They were partners, after all. Though, despite all their years together, Master Anakin's recent behavior made it sadly clear that Master Kenobi's lovely manners had entirely failed to rub off. "When was the last time you saw him? Do you know where he is?" C-3PO's photoreceptors registered the senator's flush as she lowered her eyes and said, "No." 3 years running the household of a career politician stopped C-3PO from popping back out and reminding the senator that Master Anakin had told her just yesterday that he was on his way to Mustafar. He knew very well that the senator's memory failed only when she decided it should. "Padme, you must help me," Master Kenobi said. "Anakin must be found. He must be stopped." "How can you say that?" She pulled back from him and turned away, folding her arms over the curve of her belly. "He's just won the war!" The war was never the Republic against the Separatists. It was Palpatine against the Jedi. We lost. The rest of it was just play-acting.
"It was real enough for everyone who died."
"Yes." Now it was Master Kenobi's turn to lower his eyes, including the children at the temple.
"What?"
"They were murdered, Padme. I saw it." He took her shoulders and turned her back to face him. "They were murdered by Anakin."
"It's a lie."
She pushed him away, forcefully enough that C-3PO nearly triggered the security alert then and there. But Master Kenobi only regarded her with an expression that matched C-3PO's internal recognition files of sadness and pity.
"He could never. He could never. Not my Anakin."
Master Kenobi's voice was soft and slow. "He must be found." Her reply was even softer. C-3PO's oral sensor barely recorded it at all.
"You've decided to kill him."
Master Kenobi said gravely, "He has become a very great threat." At this, the senator's medical condition seemed to finally overcome her. Her knees buckled, and Master Kenobi was forced to catch her and help her onto the sofa. Apparently, Master Kenobi knew somewhat more about human physiology than did C-3PO. Though his photoreceptors hadn't been dark to the ongoing changes in Senator Amidala's contour, C-3PO had no idea what they might signify. At any rate, Master Kenobi seemed to comprehend the situation instantly. He settled her comfortably onto the sofa and stood frowning down at her.
"Anakin is the father, isn't he?"
The senator looked away. Her eyes were leaking again. The Jedi Master said, hushed,
"I'm very sorry, Padme. If it could be different, go away, Obi-Wan. I won't help you. I can't."
She turned her face away.
"I won't help you kill him."
Master Kenobi said again, "I'm very sorry," and left. C-3PO tentatively returned to the sitting room, intending to inquire after the senator's health. But before he could access a sufficiently delicate phrase to open the discussion, the senator said softly,
"3PO,
Do you know what this is? She lifted toward him the pendant that hung from the cord of gerber leather she always wore around her neck.
Why, yes, my lady,
the protocol droid replied, bemused but happy as always to be of service.
It's a snippet of Jarpor. Younglings on Tatooine carve tribal runes into them to make amulets. They are supposed by superstitious folk to bring good fortune and protect one from harm, and sometimes are thought to be love charms. I must say, my lady, I'm quite surprised you've forgotten, seeing as how you've worn that one ever since it was given to you so many years ago by Master Am.
I hadn't forgotten what it was, 3PO, she said distantly. Thank you. I was reminding myself of the boy who gave it to me.
My lady?
If she hadn't forgotten, why would she ask? Before C-3PO could phrase a properly courteous interrogative, she said, Contact Captain Typho. Have him ready my skiff.
My lady, are you going somewhere?
We are, she said. We're going to Mustafar. From the shadows beneath the mirror-polished skiff's landing ramp, Obi-Wan Kenobi watched Captain Typho try to talk her out of it.
My lady, the Naboo security chief protested. At least let me come with you.
Thank you, Captain, but there's no need, Padme said distantly. The war's over, and this is a personal errand. And, Captain, it must remain personal, do you understand? You know nothing of my leaving, nor where I am bound, nor when I can be expected to return.
As you wish, my lady, Typho said, with a reluctant bow. But I strongly disagree with this decision.
I'll be fine, Captain. After all, I have 3PO to look after me.
Obi-Wan could clearly hear the droids murmured,
Oh, dear.
After Typho finally climbed into his speeder and took off, Padme and her droid boarded the skiff. She wasted no time at all. The skiff's repulsor lifts engaged before the landing ramp had even retracted.
Obi-Wan had to jump for it.
He swung inside just as the hatch sealed itself and the gleaming starship leapt for the sky.
Darth Vader stood in the command bridge of the Mustafar Control Center, hand of durasteel clasping hand of flesh behind him, and gazed up through the transparisteel view wall at the galaxy he would one day rule. He paid no attention to the litter of corpses around his feet. He could feel his power growing, indeed. He had the measure of his master already. Not long after Palpatine shared the secret of Darth Plagueis' discovery, their relationship would undergo a sudden transformation, a fatal transformation. Everything was proceeding according to plan, and yet he couldn't shake a certain creeping sensation, a kind of cold, slimy ooze that slithered up the veins of his legs and spread clammy tendrils through his guts, almost as though he was still afraid. She will die, you know, the dragon whispered. He shook himself, scowling. Impossible. He was Darth Vader. Fear had no power over him. He had destroyed his fear. All things die. Yet it was as though, when he had crushed the dragon under his boot, the dragon had sunk venomed fangs into his heel. Now its poison chilled him to the bone. Even stars burn out. He shook himself again and strode toward the holocom. He would talk to his master. Palpatine had always helped him keep the dragon down.
A comlink chimed. Yoda opened his eyes in the darkness.
Yes, Master Kenobi?
We're landing now. Are you in position?
I am.
A moment of silence.
Master Yoda, if we don't see each other again...
Think not of after, Obi-Wan. Always now, even eternity will be.
Another moment of silence. Longer.
May the Force be with you.
It is. And may the Force be with you, young Obi-Wan.
The transmission ended. Yoda rose. A gesture opened the grating of the vent shaft where he had waited in meditation, revealing the vast conic well that was the Grand Convocation Chamber of the Galactic Senate. It was sometimes called the Senate Arena. Today, this nickname would be particularly apt. Yoda stretched blood back into his green flesh. This was his time. 900 years of study and training, of teaching and of meditation, all now focused and refined and resolved into the single moment. The sole purpose of his vast span of existence had been to prepare him to enter the heart of night and bring his light against the darkness. He adjusted the angle of his blade against his belt. He draped his robe across his shoulders. With reverence, with gratitude, without fear, and without anger, Yoda went forth to war. A silvery flash outside caught Darth Vader's eye, as though an elegantly curved mirror swung through the smoke and cinders, picking up the shine of white-hot lava. From one knee, he could look right through the holoscan of his master while he continued his report. He was no longer afraid. He was too busy pretending to be respectful. The Separatist leadership is no more, my master.
It is finished, then.
The image offered a translucent mockery of a smile.
You have restored peace and justice to the galaxy, Lord Vader.
That is my sole ambition, master. The image tilted its head, its smile twisting without transition to a scowl.
Lord Vader, I sense a disturbance in the Force. You may be in danger.
He glanced at the mirror flash outside. He knew that ship. In danger of being kissed to death, perhaps. How should I be in danger, Master?
I cannot say, but the danger is real. Be mindful.
Be mindful. Be mindful, he thought, with a mental sneer. Is that the best you can do? I could get that much from Obi-Wan. I will, my master. Thank you. The image faded. He got to his feet, and now the sneer was on his lips and in his eyes. You're the one who should be mindful, my master. I am a disturbance in the Force. Outside, the sleek skiff settled to the deck. He spent a moment reassembling his Anakin Skywalker face. He let Anakin Skywalker's love flow through him. Let Anakin Skywalker's glad smile come to his lips. Let Anakin Skywalker's youthful energy bring a joyous bounce to his step as he trotted to the entrance over the mess of corpses and severed body parts. He'd meet her outside, and he'd keep her outside. He had a feeling she wouldn't approve of the way he had redecorated the control center. And after all, he thought, with a mental shrug, there's no arguing taste. The holding office of the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic comprised the nether vertex of the Senate Arena. It was little more than a circular preparations area, a green room where guests of the Chancellor might be entertained before entering the Senate podium. The circular pod on its immense hydraulic pillar, which contained controls that coordinated the movement of floating Senate delegation pods and rising into the focal point of the chamber above. Above that podium, the vast hollow presence of a kneeling Sith bowed before a shadow that stood below. Guards in scarlet flanked the shadow. A Shagreean toady cringed nearby. But the danger is real. Be mindful.
I will, my master. Thank you.
The hollow presence faded, and where its huge translucency had knelt was now revealed another presence. A physical presence, tiny and aged. Clad in robes and leaning on a twist of wood. But his physical presence was an illusion. The truth of him could be seen only in the Force. In the Force, he was a fountain of light.
Pity your new disciple, I do. So lately an apprentice, so soon without a master.
Why, Master Yoda, what a delightful surprise. Welcome.
The voice of the shadow hummed with anticipation.
Let me be the first to wish you Happy Empire Day.
Find it happy you will not, nor will the murderer you call Vader.
Ah.
The shadow stepped closer to the light.
So that is the threat I felt. Who is it, if I may ask? Who have you sent to kill him?
Enough it is that you know your own destroyer.
Oh, pish, Master Yoda. It wouldn't be Kenobi, would it? Please say it's Kenobi. Lord Vader gets such a thrill from killing people who care for him.
Behind the shadow, some meters away, Mos Amida, the Shagreean toady who was Speaker of the Galactic Senate, heard a whisper in Palpatine's voice.
Flee.
He did. Neither light nor shadow gave his exit a glance.
So easily slain, Obi-Wan is not.
Neither are you, apparently. But that is about to change.
The shadow took another step, and another. A lightsaber appeared, green as sunlight in a forest.
The test of that today will be.
Even a fraction of the dark side is more power than your Jedi arrogance can conceive. Living in the light, you have never seen the depth of the darkness.
The shadow spread arms that made its sleeves into black wings.
Until now.
Lightning speared from outstretched hands, and the battle was on. Padme stumbled down the landing ramp into Anakin's arms. Her eyes were raw and numb. Once inside the ship, her emotional control had finally shattered, and she had sobbed the whole way there, crying from relentless, mind-shredding dread. And so her lips were swollen, and her whole body shook, and she was just so grateful, so incredibly grateful, that again she flooded with fresh tears. Grateful that he was alive. Grateful that he'd come bounding across the landing deck to meet her, that he was still strong and beautiful, that his arms still were warm around her and his lips were soft against her hair.
Anakin, my Anakin.
She shivered against his chest.
I've been so frightened.
Shh, shh, it's all right. He stroked her hair until her trembling began to fade. Then he cupped her chin and gently raised her face to look into his eyes. You never need to worry about me. Didn't you understand? No one can hurt me. No one will ever hurt either of us.
It wasn't that, my love. It was... Oh, Anakin, he said such terrible things about you.
Anakin smiled down at her.
About me?
Who would want to say bad things about me? He chuckled.
Who would dare?
Obi-Wan. She smeared tears from her cheeks. He said, he told me you turned to the dark side. That you murdered Jedi. Even younglings. Just having gotten the words out made her feel better. Now all she had to do was rest in his arms while he held her and hugged her and promised her he would never do anything like any of that. And she started half a smile aimed up toward his eyes. But instead of the light of love in his eyes, she saw only reflections of lava. He didn't say, I could never turn to the dark side. He didn't say, murder younglings, me, that's just crazy. He said, Obi-Wan's alive? His voice had dropped an octave and had gone colder than the chills that were spreading from the base of her spine.
Yes. He said he was looking for you.
Did you tell him where I am?
No, Anakin. He wants to kill you. I didn't tell him anything. I wouldn't.
Too bad.
Anakin, what?
He's a traitor, Padme. He's an enemy of the state. He has to die.
Stop it, she said.
Stop talking like that. You're frightening me.
You're not the one who needs to be afraid.
It's like... Tears brimmed again. I don't even know who you are anymore.
I'm the man who loves you, he said. But he said it through clenched teeth. I'm the man who would do anything to protect you. Everything I have done for you.
Anakin.
Horror squeezed her voice down to a whisper, small and fragile and very young.
What have you done? and she prayed that he wouldn't actually answer. What I have done is bring peace to the Republic.
The Republic is dead, she whispered. You killed it. You and Palpatine.
It needed to die. New tears started, but they didn't matter. She'd never have enough tears for this.
Anakin, can't we just go? Please, let's leave. Together. Today. Now. Before you. Before something happens.
Nothing will happen. Nothing can happen. Let Palpatine call himself Emperor. Let him. He can do the dirty work. All the messy, brutal oppression it'll take to unite the galaxy forever. United against him. He'll make himself into the most hated man in history. And when the time is right, we'll throw him down. Anakin, stop. Don't you see? We'll be heroes. The whole galaxy will love us. And we will rule together. Please stop. Anakin, please stop. I can't stand it. He wasn't listening to her. He wasn't looking at her. He was looking past her shoulder. Feral joy burned from his eyes, and his face was no longer human. You. From behind her, calmly precise with that clipped Coruscanti accent, Padme, move away from him. Obi-Wan! She whirled, and he was on the landing ramp, still and sad. No! You, growled a voice that should have been her love's. You brought him here! She turned back, and now he was looking at her. His eyes were full of flame.
Anakin?
Padme, move away. There was an urgency in Obi-Wan's voice that sounded closer to fear than Padme had ever heard from him. He's not who you think he is. He will harm you. Anakin's lips peeled off his teeth. I would thank you for this, if it were a gift of love.
Trembling, shaking her head, she began to back away. No, Anakin. No.
Palpatine was right. Sometimes it is the closest who cannot see. I loved you too much, Padme. He made a fist, and she couldn't breathe. I loved you too much to see you. To see what you are. A veil of red descended on the world. She clawed at her throat, but there was nothing there her hands could touch. Let her go, Anakin. His answer was a predator snarl over the body of its prey. You will not take her from me. She wanted to scream, to beg, to howl.
No, Anakin, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I love you.
But her locked throat strangled the truth inside her head, and the world veil of red smoked toward black. Let her go. Never. The ground fell away beneath her, and then a white flash of impact blasted her into night. In the Senate arena, lightning forked from the hands of a Sith and bent away from the gesture of a Jedi to shock Red Robes into unconsciousness. Then there were only the two of them. Their clash transcended the personal. When new lightning blazed, it was not Palpatine burning Yoda with his hate. It was the Lord of all Sith scorching the Master of all Jedi into a smoldering huddle of clothing and green flesh. 1,000 years of hidden Sith exulted in their victory. Your time is over. The Sith rule the galaxy, now and forever. And it was the whole of the Jedi Order that rocketed from its huddle, making of its own body a weapon to blast the Sith to the ground.
At an end your rule is, and not short enough it was, I must say.
There appeared a blade the color of life. From the shadow of a black wing, a small weapon, a holdout, an easily concealed backup, a tiny bit of treachery expressing the core of Sith mastery, slid into a withered hand and spat a flame-colored blade of its own. When those blades met, it was more than Yoda against Palpatine, more than millennia of Sith against the legions of Jedi. This was the expression of the fundamental conflict of the universe itself. Light against dark. Winner take all. Obi-Wan knelt beside Padme's unconscious body, where she lay limp and broken in the smoky dusk. He felt for a pulse. It was thin and erratic.
Anakin.
Anakin, what have you done? In the Force, Anakin burned like a fusion torch. You turned her against me! Obi-Wan looked at the best friend he had ever had.
You did that yourself, he said sadly.
I'll give you a chance, Obi-Wan, for old time's sake. Walk away.
If only I could.
Go someplace out of the way. Retire. Meditate. That's what you like, isn't it? You don't have to fight for peace anymore. Peace is here. My empire is peace.
Your empire?
It will never have peace. It was founded on treachery and innocent blood.
Don't make me kill you, Obi-Wan.
If you are not with me, you are against me.
Only Sith deal in absolutes, Anakin. The truth is never black and white.
He rose, spreading empty hands. Let me take Padme to a med center. She's hurt, Anakin. She needs medical attention.
She stays.
Anakin, you don't get to take her anywhere. You don't get to touch her. She's mine, do you understand? It's your fault, all of it. You made her betray me!
Anakin.
Anakin's hand sprouted a bar of blue plasma. Obi-Wan sighed. He brought out his own lightsaber and angled it before him.
Then I will do what I must.
You'll try, Anakin said, and leapt. Obi-Wan met him in the air. Blue blades crossed, and the volcano above echoed their lightning with a shout of fire. C-3PO cautiously poked his head around the rim of the skiff's hatch. Though his threat avoidance subroutines were in full screaming overload, and all he really wanted to be doing was finding some nice dark closet in which to fold himself and power down until this was all over, preferably an armored closet with a door that locked from the inside or could be welded shut. He wasn't particular on that point. He found himself nonetheless creeping down the skiff's landing ramp into what appeared to be a perfectly appalling rain of molten lava and burning cinders, which was an entirely ridiculous thing for any sensible droid to be doing. But he kept going because he hadn't liked the sound of those conversations at all. Not one little bit. He couldn't be entirely certain what the disagreement among the humans was concerned with, but one element had been entirely clear. She's hurt, Anakin. She needs medical attention. He shuffled out into the swirling smoke. Burning rocks clattered around him. The senator was nowhere to be seen, and even if he could find her, he had no idea how he could get her back to her ship. He certainly had not been designed for transporting anything heavier than a tray of cocktails. After all, weight-bearing capability was what cargo droids were for. But through the volcano's roar and the gusts of wind, his sonoreceptors picked up a familiar Furu Wheat Peru, which his auto-translation protocol converted to Don't Worry, You'll Be All Right.
R2?
C-3PO called.
R2, are you out here?
A few steps more, and C-3PO could see the little astromech. He tangled his manipulator arm in the senator's clothing and was dragging her across the landing deck.
R2, stop that this instant! You'll damage her!
R2-D2's dome swiveled to bring his photoreceptor to bear on the nervous protocol droid. What exactly do you suggest? It whistled.
Well, oh, all right. We'll do it together.
There came a turning point in the clash of the light against the dark. It did not come from a flash of lightning or slash of energy blade, though there were these in plenty. It did not come from a flying kick or a surgically precise punch, though these were traded too. It came as the battle shifted from the holding office to the great chancellor's podium. It came as the hydraulic lift beneath the podium raised it on its tower of durasteel 100 meters and more, so that it became a laser point of battle flaring at the focus of the vast emptiness of the Senate Arena. It came as the Force and the podium's controls ripped delegation pods free of the curving walls and made of them hammers, battering rams, catapult stones, crashing and crushing against each other in a rolling thunder roar that echoed the Senate's cheers for the galaxy's new emperor. It came when the Avatar of Light resolved into the lineage of the Jedi, when the lineage of the Jedi refined into one single Jedi. It came when Yoda found himself alone against the dark. In that lightning spear tornado of feet and fists and blades and bashing machines, his vision finally pierced the darkness that had clouded the Force. Finally, he saw the truth. This truth. That he, the Avatar of Light, supreme master of the Jedi Order, the fiercest, most implacable, most devastatingly powerful foe the darkness had ever known, just didn't have it. He'd never had it. He had lost before he started. He had lost before he was born. The Sith had changed. The Sith had grown, had adapted, had invested 1,000 years intensive study into every aspect of not only the Force, but Jedi lore itself, in preparation for exactly this day. The Sith had remade themselves. They had become new, while the Jedi had spent the last millennium training to refight the last war. The new Sith could not be destroyed with a lightsaber. They could not be burned away by any torch of the Force. The brighter his light, the darker their shadow. How could one win a war against the dark when war itself had become the dark's own weapon? He knew at that instant that this insight held the hope of the galaxy. But if he fell here, that hope would die with him. Yoda thought.
A problem this is.
Blade to blade, they were identical. After thousands of hours in lightsaber sparring, they knew each other better than brothers, more intimately than lovers. They were complementary halves of a single warrior. In every exchange, Obi-Wan gave ground. It was his way. And he knew that to strike Anakin down would burn his own heart to ash. Exchanges flashed. Leaps were sideslipped or met with flying kicks. Ankle sweeps skipped over and punches parried. The door of the control center fell in pieces, and then they were inside among the bodies. Consoles exploded in fountains of white-hot sparks as they ripped free of their moorings and hurtled through the air. Dead hands spasmed on triggers, and blaster bolts sizzled through impossibly intricate lattices of ricochet. Obi-Wan barely caught some and flipped them at Anakin. A desperation move. Anything to distract him. Anything to slow him down. Easily, contemptuously, Anakin sent them back, and the bolts flared between their blades until their galvaning faded and the particles of the packeted beams dispersed into radioactive fog.
Don't make me destroy you, Obi-Wan.
Anakin's voice had gone deeper than a well and bleak as the obsidian cliffs.
You're no match for the power of the dark side.
I've heard that before,
Obi-Wan said through his teeth, parrying madly.
But I never thought I'd hear it from you.
A roar of the Force blasted Obi-Wan back into a wall, smashing breath from his lungs, leaving him swaying, half-stunned. Anakin stepped over bodies and lifted his blade for the kill. Obi-Wan had only one trick left, one that wouldn't work twice, but it was a very good trick. It had, after all, worked rather splendidly on Grievous. He twitched one finger, reaching through the Force to reverse the polarity of the electrodrivers in Anakin's mechanical hand. Durasteel fingers sprang open, and a lightsaber tumbled free. Obi-Wan reached. Anakin's lightsaber twisted in the air and flipped into his hand. He poised both blades in a cross before him. The flaw of power is arrogance.
You hesitate, Anakin said. The flaw of compassion.
It's not compassion, Obi-Wan said sadly.
It's reverence for life, even yours. It's respect for the man you were. He sighed. It's regret for the man you should have been.
Anakin roared and flew at him, using both the Force and his body to crash Obi-Wan back into the wall once more. His hand seized Obi-Wan's wrists with impossible strength, forcing his arms wide.
I am so sick of your lectures!
Dark power bore down with his grip. Obi-Wan felt the bones of his forearms bending, beginning to feather toward the greenstick fractures that would come before the final breaks.
Oh, he thought. Oh, this is bad.
The end came with astonishing suddenness. The Shadow could feel how much it cost the little green freak to bend back his lightnings into the cage of energy that enclosed them both. The creature had reached the limits of his strength. The Shadow released its power for an instant, long enough only to whirl away through the air and alight upon one of the delegation pods as it flew past. And the creature leapt to follow, half a second too slow. The Shadow unleashed its lightning while the creature was still in the air, and the little green freak took its full power. The shock blasted him backward to crash against the podium, and he fell. He fell a long way. The base of the arena was 100 meters below, littered with twisted scraps and jags of metal from the pods destroyed in the battle. And as the little green freak fell, finally, above, the victorious Shadow became once again only Palpatine. A very old, very tired man, gasping for air as he leaned on the pod's rail. Old he might have been, but there was nothing wrong with his eyesight. He scanned the wreckage below, and he did not see a body. He flicked a finger, and in the Chancellor's podium, a dozen meters away, a switch tripped, and sirens sounded throughout the enormous building. Another surge of the Force sent his pod streaking in a downward spiral to the holding office at the base of the podium tower. Clone troops were already swarming into it.
It was Yoda, he said as he swung out of the pod. Another assassination attempt. Find him and kill him. If you have to, blow up the building.
He didn't have time to direct the search personally. The Force hummed a warning in his bones. Lord Vader was in danger. Mortal danger. Clones scattered. He stopped one officer.
You. Call the shuttle dock and tell them I'm on my way. Have my ship warmed and ready.
The officer saluted, and Palpatine, with vigor that surprised even himself, ran. With the help of the Force, Yoda sprinted along the surface accessway below the arena faster than a human being could run. He sliced conduits as he passed, filling the accessway behind him with coils of high-voltage cables, twisting and spitting lightning. Every few dozen meters, he paused just long enough to slash a hole in the accessway's wall. Once his pursuers got past the cables, they would have to divide their forces to search each of his possible exits. But he knew they could afford to. There were thousands of them. He pulled his comlink from inside his robe without slowing down. The Force whispered a set of coordinates, and he spoke them into the link.
Delay not,
he added.
Swiftly closing is the pursuit. Failed I have, and kill me they will.
The convocation center of the Galactic Senate was a drum-mounted dome more than a kilometer in diameter. Even with the aid of the Force, Yoda was breathing hard by the time he reached its edge. He cut through the floor beneath him and dropped down into another accessway, this one used for maintenance on the huge lighting system that shone downward onto Republic Plaza through transparasteel panels that floored the underside of the huge dome's rim. He cut into the light well. The reflected wattage nearly blinded him to the vertiginous drop below the transparasteel on which he stood. Without hesitation, he cut through that as well and dived headlong into the night, catching the nether edges of his long cloak to use as an improvised airfoil. He let the Force guide him in a soaring freefall away from the convocation center. He was too small to trigger its automated defense perimeter,
but the open cockpit speeder toward which he fell would get blasted from the sky if it deviated 1 meter inward from its curving course. He released his robe so that it flapped upward, making a sort of drogue that righted him in the air so that he fell feet first into the speeder's passenger.